And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Friday the 13th for Awesome Mania here with your boy Michael. And as always, your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor. Ben,
hello.
You sound so much better.
Yeah, right? I can smoke now.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode, great having Jordan on again.
Yeah.
Loved your Eddie Izzard. Yep. Even though that was probably killing you more than anything.
I literally couldn't talk the next day. Like, but I had no voice.
But it was still hilarious, nonetheless. But it is good that you're doing better and that you're sounding better.
Yeah.
But about speaking about being better and stuff like that, we should probably just hop right into the big stuff right away of the
announcing the AwesomeCon panel.
We could do that. I normally save stuff like that for the end. I was talking more about the coronavirus stuff.
Oh, fuck it. I don't want to talk about that bullshit, man. Like, everything is canceled. Done. There we go. Next. Well, everything except WrestleMania, apparently.
Yeah, but also the fact that, you know, now, like, tonight, SmackDown's going to be at the Performance Center.
I don't care.
Yeah. But
this isn't the first time, like, they've been running, they ran crowdless shows in Korakuen Hall in Japan last week. Like, this isn't new.
No. Yeah. I think it's just become more sensationalized since what happened Wednesday night in the NBA. Would you agree with that?
Between that and the stuff that happened in the NCAA with the coach.
Yeah.
Who was literally
carted off
from courtside in the middle of the last quarter.
Yeah.
So, I think when it comes to the WWE, I'm not sure it's as big of a deal as it is to say NBA or NFL or XFL or the NCAA, because you can work around it. What you do is tonight is you do your live show and then you pre-tape like 6 weeks of SmackDown. Right? You can't really do that in the NFL. Right?
Yeah.
What I want is nothing more than AEW, because AEW have been building up the appearance of that the Exalted One is going to appear next week. Right? And that, like, every hint is that it's Matt Hardy. Right? Me personally, I want it to be Matt Hardy, but I want it to be a version of Matt Hardy, and I also want like broken Matt Hardy to be fighting the Dark Order, so he's on both sides of the fight. I think that would be brilliant. But like, I want nothing more than like AEW to go, what we'll do is we'll pre-tape a segment where the Exalted One shows up, then we're gonna fly the entire company out to the Hardy compound and pre-record a month and a half's fucking shit where the Exalted One has tracked the entire roster in the Hardy compound, and it's at a month and a half long final deletion. I want nothing more than that.
So, but not only that, but also
my point is with professional wrestling, there are ways around the restriction, right?
Yeah, and I think the resources are there more now than, you know, maybe say 10, 20 years ago, especially for WWE, being how they have their own performance center.
Yeah.
You know, AEW has Jacksonville, Florida as a place that they can do, which is where they are moving their shows to,
yeah.
You know, because that's their home base. So it actually works out now rather than like say 10, 20 years ago when we didn't have a performance center that they could do shows at.
Yeah.
So it works out. And like you said, you know, it's going to make things a lot easier for at least WWE and still be able to put out content in for AEW. But I love your Hardy compound idea.
I mean, that would be brilliant.
It would be like perfect.
They spend all this time trying to get away from the Exalted One, who is clearly Matt Hardy. And then, like, just as they're about to get beaten, like, broken Matt Hardy shouting, I will save you. And you're like, wait, you're... And then it's like Matt Hardy versus Matt Hardy. And it's just brilliant. I think that would be brilliant. Make it happen.
So let's stick with AEW as we go into news and notes, the real news and notes. Blood and Guts match participants announced and the rules have been announced. For those of you who didn't hear that, that was Ben cracking his knuckles because he's getting ready.
What the fuck? Okay, you do your thing first.
So you, I want to relay back to our conversation via text on this.
Yeah.
Where I go, like, not a surprise. It's the Inner Circle versus the Elite.
Yeah.
And here's why I say it's not a surprise. It is a marquee match with your marquee headline talent. That's why I was not surprised that it was Inner Circle versus the Elite, even though lately storylines have been
I'll get to this, don't you worry.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I know storyline wise, you know, it's been more the Elite kind of having their infighting, Cody doing his own thing, you know, an Inner Circle feuding with Moxley. But at least this past Wednesday, they went back to doing the Inner Circle Elite feud to build up.
Because they had no choice.
Yeah, they had no choice.
Because they put themselves into a fucking corner.
Yeah, but then they announced the rules. War games, anyone? but we knew that. But we
I like the fact that they're going to have the WCW thing of the people just walking around the outside of the cage rather than the cages at the top of the ramp.
Yeah.
I've always preferred that.
Well, I remember a couple WCW ones where they had them in the backstage. I think it was like the second or the third one. The rest, like, the wrestlers were in the backstage and then they would release them out that way. I thought that was kind of cool too. But yeah, no, I think that's kind of cool that they're going to do that. The question that I have is about the cage itself. Like, because I know Cody has been very critical of WWE taking the roof off the cage. And as we remember, there's been a, like, back in the WCW days, crap ton of injuries because of the roof. Like, J.J. Dillon's shoulder is, like, one that comes to mind right off the bat.
Yeah, I think that's kind of solved with the new AEW cage being so tall, though. We'll see.
Yeah. It'll, that cage was interesting when I saw that match. It was a little different, but yeah. Unique. Your thoughts on all this for Blood and Guts?
What the fuck, dude? Like, how has Vince McMahon not sued somebody? Like, he owns the rights to War Games. This is clearly trying to be War Games, right? Admittedly, he hasn't sued other places that have tried to do Rumble matches or whatever. So, whatever. But here's the main problem with it. You drop this thing, Blood and Guts, on Revolution, right? And you're like, and everyone's like, ooh, Blood and Guts. That's a clear shot at Vince McMahon because he called the Kenny Omega John Moxley match. Well, that's just Blood and Guts. That's not what we do, buddy. Good shit. He's so big. But I would say that the bigger problem is what happened afterwards. They started by announcing the participants on Twitter.
Yeah.
Not only did they announce the participants on Twitter, they announced that one set of the participants were the Elite. A member of whom in the picture is Hangman Page, who has, on being the Elite, quit the Elite twice. And then did so again the day after the teams were announced.
Great booking right there, eh?
You then book the Elite against the Inner Circle, which, if this had been 3 or 4 months ago, like post Full Gear, would have made some sense. Because you had all the momentum coming out of Full Gear. You had the red-hot feud between Proud and the Powerful and the Young Bucks. You had Cody and Jericho. You had Dustin and Jake. You had...
Kenny and Kenny was feuding with Moxley, but you could have easily set something up between Kenny and Guevara.
Easily.
Yeah. Right?
And Paige at that time was still kind of in, right?
Yeah, he was still kind of in, but he was also doing his own thing. He was taking on Pac.
But you could have set up Guevara and Paige as well, or whatever. The point being, you could have got a five-man squad out of the Elite versus the Inner Circle back then. The last 4 months, we had another match between the Proud and the Powerful and the Young Bucks, which is the Young Bucks one, leaving it 1-1, which answered nothing because the whole feud was over who is the best tag team in the world. Like, remember, do you remember back to those absolute fire promos that Proud and Powerful were cutting?
Yeah.
Where they were like, we're the best, it's on site, that kind of shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those promos were straight fire. And it just stopped. It's this problem that AEW has where their feuds just stop. They don't resolve, right?
Yeah, and I haven't watched really any of the post-Revolution, but have they even done anything with Cody and MJF?
No. Cody came out the
post-Revolution.
Dynamite, the Dynamite after Revolution. And cut a promo going, he beat me. What was personal became professional, is personal again. And the only way I'm going to be okay with this is if Max comes out here and tells me he beat me fair and square. At which point Jake the Snake came out, cut a promo, and that was that. Cody's not even mentioned MJF since.
And that was the big thing that I was afraid of.
Now, then, like, later in the evening, Dustin got jumped by the Inner Circle. Cody came down to help him out. Cody got beamed in the back with a chair by Ortiz. And then this week on Dynamite, he had a singles match with Ortiz, which led to the Inner Circle beating down the Elite again.
So essentially what we were seeing in the first like 5-6 episodes of Dynamite when it debuted. Yeah. We're back to that again.
Yeah.
So it's been okay then for me to not watch.
Like Sean Spears, MJF, Butcher and the Blade, so many of Cody's feuds just stop, right? They just stop. And then the same thing happened with the only, like, the Young Bucks have had a couple of quote-unquote feuds. They had the one with the Lucha Brothers, which kind of got blown off in Escalera de Muerte. They had the one with Proud and Powerful, which just stopped. I wouldn't call the one with Kenny and Hangman a feud because it was one match, but it's not over yet, clearly, because Matt and Hangman fucking hate each other, apparently. But I don't know, just... The promotion order for this made no sense. Like, no sense at all.
Like, wouldn't it have made some sense to, like, actually, like, announce the match, announce the rules, and then eventually announce the participants?
Yeah. Or even if you announce the participants, like, if announce the match, then announce the rules on one Dynamite, announce the participants on the next Dynamite, and Hangman go, no, I quit. You're down 4-5 in that cage. You're either going to convince me to join you by treating me like a fucking equal, which none of you do, or you're going to find yourself another partner. Or in the case of what would probably happen is Hangman would come through anyway and get the big face pop. But
yeah. So, but yeah, it's just, I mean, I want to watch. I mean, well, I know they still plan on doing Blood and Guts on the 25th. It's just a matter of where are they going to do it, because obviously
they announced that they're doing it out of Jacksonville.
Okay, so they did confirm that.
And they postponed the Newark show to the 22nd of July?
Yeah.
June, July, one of the three.
I think it was July. So, because I knew that they had already announced the postponement of Newark, because obviously state of New Jersey has the shutdown. But I wasn't sure because they had announced the replacement for this upcoming one from Rochester, New York, but they never, or last time I looked, they hadn't confirmed where the March 25th episode was going to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes sense. As we talked about in the beginning, you know, they have the home base in Jacksonville, so it makes a lot of sense to do it there. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, ready to move on to the next one? Because I know you have comments on this one.
I'll just say, what was announced was fine. The order it was announced in was confusing as fuck.
Yep.
You just rejig things to be announce the match, announce the rules, announce the participants, then have your big fight between the Inner Circle and the Elite and all that sort of stuff. It works perfectly. The order they did it was garbage.
Yep. So next up in the news and notes, we have the WWE pressuring WXW to cut ties with David Starr. Mm-hmm. Obviously, David Starr has a very, you know, I don't want to say anti-WWE stance, but he wants all of professional wrestling to get unionized.
He is pro-independent rather than anti-WWE.
Yeah, but he does want wrestling to be unionized, which is something that WWE does not want to do, or at least Vince McMahon does not want to do. And being how a lot of these, you know, UK, you know, European federations, promotions are now working with WWE, you know, WXW being one of them, WWE is obviously putting the pressure on them to cut ties with David Starr, and OTT is another one as well.
Well, I doubt that OTT will cut ties with David Starr.
Yeah.
The big one is Progress is the other one.
Yeah. And yeah, because that one was done a while back, I believe.
Well, yes and no. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I love watching David Starr wrestle. For a very long time, he's been one of my favorite people to watch wrestle. He's as good as he says he is, if not better. What WWE is doing here is absolutely fucking disgraceful. It not only impacts David's income, but it robs fans of payoffs that companies have been building to. WXW, there is a very famous storyline that David Starr is 0-16 against Walter. And they've been building and they've been building to the moment he finally beats him. It's not going to happen now. Last year in Progress, every year Progress holds a tournament called Super Strong Star 16. And last year, David Starr won Super Strong Star 16. I have never heard a pop like it. It was insane. David Starr should have been the next champion of that company. Instead, what happened was David Starr had his title shot. and Eddie Dennis was inserted into the match. You know, NXT UK talent Eddie Dennis was inserted into the match and won, taking away David Starr. The organic build, the progress has been putting into David Starr for 2-3 years. I fucking hate what they're doing to David Starr. He's right to want company, the wrestling to unionize. I feel bad because he was supposed to have a highlight match at OTT this weekend against Moxley for the OTT championship, but that got cancelled because of the corona thing.
Yeah.
I hate that this is happening to someone as talented as David Starr.
I just want to throw one question out there.
Yeah.
There was a match that David Starr was in. I believe it was either with Walter or Pete Dunne. Mm-hmm. One of the two went when they're and they had the UK title with them.
Is this what you're talking about when he stands on it?
And he stomped on it. Yeah. And he stomped on the belt. Do you think that also in a way plays a factor? Because in a way that can be regarded as being disrespectful towards the company.
You know how many times fucking WWE people have done stuff and said, I'm just being a heel. Chris Jericho tearing up flags, tearing up crowd signs, throwing drinks on people. Like, it's just it's part of the show, man.
Right. Well, no, and I understand that. But when you're on that corporate level,
it doesn't matter. Man, it doesn't matter. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't. If you want to be able to use the line, I'm just doing it in character, right? If someone else does something in character, you can't hold that against them. You cannot. That's bullshit.
Yeah. And like I said, I just wanted to bring it up because, you know, some people do bring that up as part of the conversation.
Of course, yeah. Vince is going to not like that.
Yeah.
I bet Hunter fucking loved it.
Probably did. Because that would be something that Triple H would probably do, you know? But next up, we have Nia Jax reportedly unhappy about not being booked because apparently she's supposed to return soon.
Nia, just go away. Just fuck off. Like, number one, you've just come back from dual knee surgery, right?
Yep.
Second of all, you couldn't wrestle to begin with. But more importantly, we are on the downhill run into WrestleMania. They've either got something for you or they don't. Right?
Yeah.
They're not going to suddenly change their booking just because you've stopped having bad knees. They've had this booking in line for 3 months now.
Well,
right now, admittedly, some of it got thrown off by Super Showdown because I would have much rather have seen Naomi and Bayley going at it at WrestleMania than their Blood Money.
And now that's rumored to be a 6-pack where 5 of the people have been announced, with the rumor being maybe Nia's the 6.
Yeah. But now you're not going to know if Nia actually was supposed to be in the match or if she's just in because she was bitching. Right? Just fuck off, Nia. I love you. You're great. Go do something else. You're not a great wrestler. You're not. I'm sorry.
Yeah. and then the last thing in news,
if Nia gets a headline WrestleMania match after being injured for 13 months instead of someone like Dana Brooke or Carmella or somebody's been working their ass off while Naya's been gone, I think that's a disgrace. No offense to Naya.
But there have just been...
Bring her back off to WrestleMania, give her a push into SummerSlam. Right?
Yep.
Thumbs up. Okay with that. But the people who have been there deserve to be on WrestleMania.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. Because especially somebody like Dana Brooke, who you can tell has, you know, month after month. She's worked her ass off, and you can see her improvements.
Yeah.
And she definitely deserves it. Going in, this is going to be our last story. We're going to save the Wrestling Observer stuff for later.
Yep.
Triple H, okay, I'm going to read the headline, and then I'm going to read a few things.
Yeah.
Triple H reportedly got a demotion, no longer in charge of talent. That's the headline. Mm-hmm. Meltzer noted that after George Barros and Michelle Wilson were fired, there are people in WWE who hinted that something almost as big happened in December, but it was never made clear what it was. According to a new SEC filing revealed this week, that Triple H's new job title is Executive Vice President, Global Talent Strategy and Development. To many in the company, this is considered a demotion because his previous job title was the head of talent relations, and he oversaw many departments as EVP of talent, live events, and creative. Triple H has been moved from his main duties, and now his main role is to deal with NXT, selling NXT TV rights, and overseeing and expanding NXT worldwide. And now that Brad Bloom... Vince McMahon's chief of staff took over Triple H's other duties as executive vice president of operations. So now Mark Carano reports to Bloom instead of Triple H.
Okay.
So let's talk about the demotion portion that people like to talk about. And you and I talked about this before we started recording, and I think you and I both agree that this isn't really a demotion. This is more
of a sidestep.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing either, because, you know, you look at it, he was the EVP of talent, live events, and creative. Now he's doing global talent strategy and development. He's now learning something new. And, you know, everybody wants Triple H to eventually take over the company from Vince McMahon. Well, how do you do that if you don't know all these other aspects of the company? So this, in a way, could actually become very beneficial to Triple H for that next step, where he actually, instead of maybe moving sideways, move up.
Yeah. And it also, it reads a lot like he's now more focused on NXT as opposed to being more company-wide.
Which also would explain a lot of things, because we've been reading reports how Triple H hasn't really been at Raw or SmackDown anymore, and that his sole focus has been NXT.
I'm so okay with that.
And that makes, and you know, seeing this type of report, it goes, makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, like with Vince, we haven't seen the reports of him not being around is because he's dealing with the XFL.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense. So... But any other thoughts on, you know, this outside of, you know, what we've already just said on Triple H?
If it leads to a better product, I'm for it.
I think we both can agree on
like,
that.
I mean, NXT has been and continues to be the best product on the market, with Dynamite a very close second, in my opinion. Other people may see it the other way around.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, if Triple H can put out programming like that once a week, I'm okay with it.
Yep. But speaking about programming that wasn't so great, as we transition into our next thing, Elimination Chamber.
Oh.
I heard that burp over here, good sir. I think
that was indigestion caused about thinking about Elimination Chamber.
So we're just going to run through this, because obviously the next thing we're going to talk about is AEW Revolution, which is a card that we both really want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So real quick, Evolution on the pre-show, you had the Viking Raiders defeat Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder in
Elimination Chamber.
Yes.
No, Revolution.
Oh yeah, my bad. Elimination Chamber.
Tell me something.
Yes.
Why was this match happening?
I don't know, but it was a waste of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, correction. 4 minutes and 50 seconds.
Well, you got to include entrances, so it was probably about 7 minutes.
Yeah. I have no idea what this match was on the card. There's, like, no build. Like, unlike the very next match.
Bear in mind that the Viking Raiders have been involved in the top storyline on Raw with the AOP and Seth Rollins and
Murphy
and
Kevin Owens,
Street Profits and all of that. And suddenly they're put on the pre-show. And I love Kurt and Zach. I really do. I love them to bits. They're the best tag team that they don't do anything with. I would push those two to the moon if I was in charge of something. So. But the fuck?
Yeah, but then you have your first match of the main card.
What a match.
Which was, and this is the great thing. This had like, what, 2 days build?
No. It's been building for a while.
Oh, it's been building for a while? Okay, see.
So what happened is it started out with right after the match with The Fiend at Rumble. Daniel Bryan was sat backstage, and Heath Slater walked in and was, hey, man, I'm worried about you, right? Like, seeing what The Fiend did to you, I'm worried that you're going to, like, not be you anymore. Daniel Bryan was like, let's have a fight in the ring. And then the next week, Heath walked up to Daniel and was like, hey, man, what the hell was that last week? And Drew Gulak got involved and started coaching up Heath Slater, which has led to Daniel Bryan against Drew Gulak at the Elimination Chamber.
Nice. And what a better place to do this at, but Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Where Drew Gulak is from.
You say that, but the crowd was fucking dead.
That's true. That was the disappointing part, because you would think, you know, hometown guy, you know, and I think the last time he was in Philadelphia, he got a big reaction too. So
the
I don't know.
The crowd was kind of dead all night. The only time the crowd came alive was when Otis finally got his hands on Dolph. The only real time they came alive. Everything else was just, eh.
But great match. Good opening match for a pay-per-view, too.
But it definitely suffered from, oh dear, Daniel Bryan's fallen on his neck again.
Mm. Yeah. But Daniel Bryan would defeat Drew Gulak by submission in a 14-minute, 20-second match.
Yep, I really enjoyed this match. And I can't stand to watch Daniel Bryan wrestle anymore, because every time he takes a bump on his neck, I'm like, yeah. And he took a lot of bumps on his neck. But I really enjoyed this match.
Now imagine watching Randy Orton versus Edge.
I don't think I'll feel the same.
Because it's been a much longer time?
No. Because, how do I put this? Edge isn't coming back full time.
This is true. Whereas Daniel Bryan is.
Right? Edge is coming back for a couple of stunt matches, and then he's going to retire again.
Yeah. Next up, you had Andrade defending the U.S. title against Humberto Carrillo in 12:20.
Then, can we put this fucking feud to bed, please? Just find Andrade someone else to feud with. Fuck me. If you take into consideration the fact that Andrade was out for a month, right? If you take into account that, I'm fairly sure this feud goes back to, like, SummerSlam. Like,
maybe? Or maybe it started after SummerSlam?
This feud has been going on for fucking ever. They had a match at Rumble. Like, They had a match at TLC.
But not only that, but they've also, and we've seen this because of the suspension, Andrade, but like they've weaved Rey Mysterio into the feud, they've weaved Angel Garza into the feud. There's only so far you can push this one because it's not an entertaining feud. Next up, you had your first Elimination Chamber match, which went a total of 32 minutes and 55 seconds as The Miz and John Morrison would retain the tag team titles against The New Day, The Usos, Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, and Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. This was kind of sloppy as hell.
I kind of liked that though.
Oh, the sloppiness?
Yeah, see...
Especially on top of, like, the chamber pod?
No, I mean, like, in general, is what I mean. The thing with an Elimination Chamber match, right, is if everything's too clean, it doesn't feel like an Elimination Chamber match, right?
Right.
Whereas... I don't know. I quite like the fact that this was a scrappy match. I don't like, I don't get how they fucked up this Otis storyline so bad. Now, don't get me wrong. I wasn't a big fan of this Otis storyline to begin with because I don't think they should have been portraying it that it was okay to be creepy like that around women, right?
Oh yeah,
but they did. How have you fucked this story up? It should have been real fucking simple. It should have been Otis goes there on Valentine's Day, Ziggler's there, Elimination Chamber rolls around, Dolph and Ziggler, Rudolph win the fucking tag titles, Elimination Chamber. Next week, Heavy Machinery win a number one contenders match. They go on a fight at WrestleMania. They come out at the end of WrestleMania with the titles, and Otis gets the girl. Right? It books itself. How do you fuck this up?
Easy. Obviously, I think the two biggest pops of the match was obviously Otis freight training through one of the pods.
Well, there were a couple of big spots. There was that. There was
Lince Dorado coming off the top of the chamber.
And we got to give massive props to Tuckett for his, like, he put when he threw Dolph off and Otis just caught him, and Tuckett was just like, shrug. Leaps on everyone else from top of pod and does flip. Like, no fucks given, right? Like,
and that's the crazy thing.
Like, he didn't even pause. He just went.
And that's the crazy thing that we always forget about Tucker. Tucker is an amazing athlete.
I think Tucker's better than Otis.
Oh, I agree with you on that one too.
Otis gets over because
the caterpillar.
No, because of his personality.
Yeah.
Right? But Tucky can go.
Yeah. Like, I like Tucker a lot. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, the crowd died. Like, when Otis finally got his hands on Dolph and all he did was, like, drop him on the pads on the outside, the crowd were just like, eh? It should have been like, Otis, fucking kill that man. You put his head between some of the links and you take his body and you move it to the other side of the chamber.
Although I will say this, I haven't seen a lot of Lucha House Party lately, but I was kind of impressed with Grand Metalik a little bit. I actually like the fact that he changed up how he does his mask now.
People forget that he got to the finals of the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah. Like it was really good to kind of see Metalik get to do more.
Yeah.
And not kind of be tied down to the three-man thing. Because I believe Kalisto is actually injured right now.
I couldn't give less of a shit.
Yeah, but... next up, you have Aleister Black defeating AJ Styles with the help of The Undertaker.
This feud's been weird. So they're trying to make it so AJ Styles is this viable contender to The Undertaker, right? But every time AJ Styles and The Undertaker have been in the ring with each other, The Undertaker's pinned him in one move. And now AJ Styles has also lost to Aleister Black, who is not The Undertaker. He should be The Undertaker, but he's not. He should be the new Spooky Boy.
I would totally be okay with an Aleister Black Undertaker match. Like, you know, like I mean, this is like one of those things where it books itself. You know, Aleister Black, it's like, who's knocking on my door to fight? Knock on the door. Undertaker. Let's go.
I think they missed their opportunity for an Aleister Black Undertaker interaction a couple of years ago with John Cena. So
yeah.
Though the promo AJ cut on Monday, if you've not seen it.
I have seen that.
Go watch it.
Oh, I'll say this.
And if you've not seen the promo from 2 weeks ago, the Randy Orton cut.
Oh, so good. With
Beth Phoenix.
So good. And I'm not gonna lie, the one that Jake the Snake Roberts did, the Cody. That was pretty good. You're doing the doing
the hand wavy thing.
Yeah.
What I will say is, it is quite clear that Randy gives a shit about this feud with Edge, and he is putting his
heart into it,
all into this feud. That promo with Beth was amazing.
And this is the Randy Orton that we always love, because like when he gives a shit and he really cares about what he's doing, he's untouchable. And that's what we're seeing untouchable. Right. Well,
he's very, very good.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. Because remember, like at the beginning of the year, we talked about like the post Rumble. And like just how his reaction was when he was doing the attack on Edge. It's like it's really good to see that a storyline is actually getting a proper build and that's actually being taken seriously.
Yeah.
So it's really nice and it's refreshing. Next up, you have the Street Profits defeating Seth Rollins and Murphy to retain the Raw Tag Team Championships.
Shrug.
Yeah. Then you had.
I'm glad the Street Profits have the belts now, but
because at least an actual tag team has it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sami Zayn, along with Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, would defeat Braun Strowman to have Sami Zayn become the new Intercontinental Champion. I'm happy for Sami. Because yep. He is long overdue for a title in WWE.
Long overdue.
This is his first title in WWE since being NXT champion.
Correct.
In, I believe 2014.
Yep.
So it's been literally almost 6 years since Sami has held a title in the WWE. So it is so overdue. Happy for Sami.
I hope it doesn't like just turn
into like a triple threat match between him, Shinsuke, and Cesaro automatically.
Oh, no. I'm well into that. That would be the best match ever. I hope it doesn't turn into him just dropping the belt the next time he defends it.
Yeah.
I want this to be a significant title reign. And I want it to be a title reign that fucking matters.
Yeah. And also the shout out by Kevin Owens for Sami Zayn. On Twitter after Sammy won. Like, that was awesome to see, you know, KO come out and support his friend, you know, and pretty much tell everyone who's bitching about it, hey, he fucking earned this.
Anyone who's bitching about that has never really watched Sammy wrestle.
Yeah. Well, I think like people like,
he did such a good job as a manager that people forgot he was one of the best wrestlers in the world.
Yep. And I hope this gets us to see more really good matches with him. And not, I mean, and I understand the 8:30 time for this match.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I understand that, but, like, I would like to see his title defense be, like, a good 30-minute match.
Right. Here's what I want. For the next year, hell, for the next 13 months till next WrestleMania, Sami Zayn gets to pick his opponent, and he gets 25 minutes on the card. And just you want the Intercontinental Championship to matter again? Bring it.
Damn right.
You just have him put on brilliant match after brilliant match after brilliant match with good opponents and good storylines that are based about, I'm better than you at wrestling, let's do a wrestle. And then the Intercontinental Championship is at its best when it is the workhorse belt, right? I mean, we're agreed on that.
Oh yeah, definitely agreed on that. And then in the main event, you had the final Elimination Chamber match, which was for a chance to face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania 36. As Shayna Baszler would eliminate Natalya, Liv Morgan, Asuka, Ruby Riott, and Sarah Logan. Yo, Natty and Liv, though.
Holy. And then they were a tag team the next night on Raw.
But I know, what I was going to say is, what Shayna Baszler did to those two in the chamber was straight up murder. You know, trapping Natty in the pod and just slamming the door on her, and then like ragdolling Liv Morgan essentially headfirst into the chamber pod and into the chain link. Mm-hmm. You know, she straight up murdered those two. How were they even on Raw the next Monday night? You know, the next night. That was.
And then they were like, and like Liv and Natty were like jawing each other through the early stages of the match. And then they were a team the next night on Raw.
Yeah. But yeah. So just to further this out there, the longest match on the card was the Tag Team Elimination Chamber match at 32:55. The second longest was Aleister Black versus AJ Styles at 23:15. Mm-hmm. And the third longest was the Women's Elimination Chamber at 21 minutes. Everything else was under 20 minutes.
Yeah, just there are a lot of matches to deal with.
And actually, one of the interesting things about this card, no Roman Reigns.
Yep.
No Baron Corbin.
Yep.
No Drew McIntyre. No Charlotte. No Becky. No Sasha. No Bayley. Like, there was, like, a lot of your top talent were not on this card.
No world championships.
No world championships. Because
they're both on fucking part-timers.
Yeah, so it's like, it was a very interesting card watching that and going like, you would think they'd at least have Drew McIntyre on this card, you know, to build up some more momentum going into Mania, you know, but you also kind of understand it in the same way too, because you already know
if
he's
Brock
got
ain't showing up.
Yeah, so now. Moving on to AEW Revolution, which was the week before.
Yeah, like I said, if Brock isn't showing up to the pay-per-view, McIntyre doesn't have a whole lot to do because he's locked in a program with Brock.
Yeah.
Look at what they did on Raw this week. They basically used McIntyre to write off Eric Rowan's shitty robotic spider.
And they actually used Edge to essentially, I don't know what's going on with MVP, Because I thought MVP was going to be done being on television, but they keep bringing him back to be a whipping boy.
No. He said he retired from in-ring competition.
Yeah.
He's now moving into a managerial role, apparently.
I actually like the idea of that. He's always been a good talker.
Me too.
He's always been a good talker. You know, so.
There are plenty of people on the roster that could use a talker.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Humberto Carrillo.
Like, honestly, you know, before we go to AEW Revolution, like, yeah. I don't know where and when Vince decided he didn't like managers anymore, but you need some managers every now and then. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like a Humberto Carrillo.
You know why Vince decided he didn't like managers?
Why?
Because he has to pay them, and they don't contribute to the in-ring thing as much. Anyway.
AEW Revolution.
Yeah.
So, we had... So this one actually lets you know about the dark match that happened that was not televised, which was Dr. Britt Baker and Penelope Ford with Kip Sabian defeating Riho and Yuka.
Who?
Riho.
Thank you.
And Yuka Sakazaki. It was a dark match, so we never got to see it. I think it might have been put on AEW Dark.
I don't think so.
But so we can't really talk about it because we didn't see it. However, on the pre-show, you had the Dark Order with Alex Reynolds and John Silver in their corner defeating SoCal Uncensored, who was missing Christopher Daniels.
Well, no, they told Chris to stay backstage.
Okay.
So before the match, there was a promo where they're all ready to go, and Frankie and Scorpio were like, hey, man, we need you to stay backstage because we don't trust you, basically. Because they've been playing up on being the Elite, and you hadn't watched Being the Elite, you wouldn't have fucking known this, that Christopher James had joined the Dark Order. He might have even been the Exalted One. And then they had the match. At the end of the match, everyone started beating down SEU. Colt Cabana came out to make the save because they were in Chicago. And he's now All Elite. And then they started beating him down some more. And then a figure that looked a lot like Vince McMahon when he did the reveal of the higher power of It Was Me All Along, Austin, started coming down the ring, and it was like, oh, it's the Exalted One. Who took off his hood to reveal it was Christopher Daniels, because there were rumors back in the day that the higher power in WWE was going to be Christopher Daniels. And he ran down and he beat up the Dark Order, proving he was not a member of the Dark Order, apparently.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Then going into the main card, you had Jake Hager defeating Dustin Rhodes in his debut match via submission. This was a good match.
I enjoyed the hell out of this match.
This is just two big hosses going at it. I
wasn't so much a fan of the whole Dustin Rhodes kissing Jake Hager's wife. But this is the 90s anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it because it was just essentially two big hosses going at it.
Just two big dudes kicking the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
A lot of people criticized this being the opener because a lot of people who watch this are used to quicker matches being the opener, right? They're used to like that New Japan Ring of Honor style where they start with a quick match. But I thought this was... and it set the tone for the evening of just...
Hard-hitting
solid
action.
Solid, hard-hitting action. Yeah.
next match, you had Darby Allin defeat Sammy Guevara in 5 minutes. So this was obviously...
This is an unfair thing because it was 5 minutes bell to bell. But they beat the shit out of each other for about 7 minutes before the bell rang.
Which is also very true.
Including, you've probably seen the highlight at this point, Sammy Guevara doing the 630 through the table onto Darby. Fun little match.
Yeah, and I loved how like Darby literally jumped across almost the entire ring to hit the coffin drop on Sammy. That was so cool. next match, you have Kenny Omega and Adam Page retaining the tag team titles over the Young Bucks. And what it has to be the match of the night.
Oh, it without a doubt. Yeah. This might be the best tag match I've ever seen. The best non-gimmick tag match I've ever seen.
Yeah. Uncle Dave gave it 6 stars.
Yeah. Which means now every member of the Elite, past or present, including Marty Scurll and Adam Cole, have a five-star match by Uncle Dave. Hangman, this is Hangman's only match to surpass, I think the stat is it's only managed to surpass like 4.5 or 4.75, and it went straight to 6. It didn't stop at 5. But
this was like bell to bell, 30 minutes and 5 seconds of just nonstop action and great storytelling.
I really enjoyed this match. If you've not seen it, do it. Do it. Familiarize yourself with the storyline first, because if you don't know the storyline, some of the moments won't mean as much.
Yep.
But yeah.
Yeah, definitely hands down match of the night.
Of the year so far.
Oh yeah. next up, you have Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander for the AEW Women's Championship.
One got bowling shoe ugly.
Well, okay, there's two things that come to mind. One, and we talked about this on the last episode, that they kind of just rushed this match with not a lot of build. That's number one. Number two, Statlander was also coming off the flu.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you're coming off the flu, don't do top rope shit.
Yeah.
Or if you know the spot is that you're going to get power bombed, don't put your opponent's legs on the outside of the top rope. Because the finish came when Statlander set Nyla up for what I think was supposed to be a top rope Hurricane Rana. You know how, like, when you're doing a Hurricane Runner, you leave the person's legs inside the ropes?
Right.
She put Nyla's legs outside the ropes as she was going for a superplex. So when she went up for the Frankensteiner and Nyla caught her to get ready to do the second rope beast bomb, Nyla's legs were on the outside of the ropes and she was kind of fucking stuck. So she managed to get one leg over and then just kind of jumped and just drilled Statland. It was
I remember, because here's the thing, I didn't watch the pay-per-view live. I actually watched it the next day, and I remember when the pay-per-view was going on, people were saying that Statlander looked a little off her game that match, and when I watched it, I was like watching it going like, yeah, she does seem a little off, you know.
No excuse.
Yeah. But Nyla is still the champion. I still think they did this match way too quickly. I think this is one that they could have done a much better build to. But I'm still happy that Nyla has the title. And then next up, you have MJF with Wardlow defeating Cody with Arn Anderson and Brandi Rhodes. This was good match.
Great. This is a great.
Great match.
It's what it needed to be.
We got the fin. We also got MJF winning, which was the important thing. Uh-huh. You know, if MJF had not won this match, just like in the vein of the Sean Spears feud,
yep.
it would have really just derailed a lot of things. So MJF definitely winning was great, but as we've discussed earlier, they haven't done shit with it since.
Well, MJF is still riding the I beat Cody train, right? Like, he's still referencing it because he's talking about going after Moxley now. But Cody's just like, let it go. And I'm like, and then you have this fucking thing where Moxley's like, yeah, I'll waive Cody's fucking no title thing. And I'm like,
we're like 4 months past. It's like, what the hell?
It's literally never come into play because Cody's never been the top of the,
like, of the standings.
What was the point in doing it? No, drop the belt to MJF and have MJF want to get
his hands. Well, I understand. Okay. You know, looking back at it in retrospect, I understand the comment of, oh, I'll waive Cody's title ban. Not saying that he is going to waive it, but I would, as a way of just saying, I'll fight anybody. That was, yeah. I think, at the end of the day, yeah, that was really the point of the promo. I think he just really said that, to, you know, also kind of get a rise out of the fans. He was like, oh, so maybe Cody could get another shot eventually? But
yeah, maybe.
But you know, looking back at it in retrospect, I think that's what it really was. But I agree.
Still, like, just don't even address it.
Yeah.
Don't address it until it becomes relevant. It's not been relevant. It's been one pay-per-view. Cody's not been in a position to be denied the title shot.
Like, yeah. Yeah, it's like, just let it ride out a little bit long, you know, a bit longer. Because I think you and I talked about, like, let it ride for like a year or two.
Yeah.
And then be like,
let it be a thing.
Yeah. next up in singles competition, we had Pac defeating Orange Cassidy via submission in a 13-minute match. Actually, this was great. Like, I'm not going to lie. Seeing Orange Cassidy come out of the sloughness and then like flip that switch was really cool. It was, and now, like, and one person who admitted this week on his podcast was Jim Ross. Yeah. He was like, you know what? I was wrong about this kid. That this kid can go. And it's like, yeah. You know, we're just so used to seeing the gimmick of the sloughness.
Well, I've seen Orange Cassidy wrestle a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So I knew what was coming.
Yeah, but I think people were so because I think when we see highlights of him, we always see the gimmick.
Hands in the pocket stuff.
The hands in the pocket stuff. We don't see Orange Cassidy, the actual wrestler.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yeah, it was a great eye-opener. And it made, people, like the old-school guys, like JR, become believers of him. And that's really good. And that's what you want to have come out of a match like this. So,
I would have preferred it if it had been a clean finish, but it's leading into a feud with Best Friends and
the Death Triangle.
Death Triangle. Who picked that name?
I don't know. And then in your main event, you had Jon Moxley defeating Chris Jericho, who would have Santana and Ortiz in his corner to become the new AEW World Champion.
Ortiz was bump of the night, by the way. If you watch when Aubrey ejects them and he like does a full on like flat back bump on the back, on the side, on the apron. So funny.
Good old Aubrey Edwards doing the the main event once again.
Number one referee.
Have you noticed that we haven't seen a lot of Earl Hebner anymore?
No, he's not been used in a while.
Yeah.
Ever since they realized he couldn't move properly, probably.
Yeah, I think after, like, what, the first Dynamite episode?
I don't know.
Maybe. But Moxley, he would do the reveal near the end of the match because he would wear the eye patch throughout the match, and then he would pull it off and go, ha-ha, I can see with both eyes. I have tricked you.
Which would have Jericho on the next Dynamite calling him a cheater. And a liar. Dishonest. I it was the right result. And I was quite fond of this one. So
yeah.
Overall, Revolution was an excellent card.
Yeah. I'm actually glad I waited till the next day to watch it.
And it needed to be.
Yeah.
Right, because this was before Elimination Chamber and after Blood Money.
And it was the literal in-between show.
There were a lot of people pissed off after Blood Money. Yeah. And the fact that AEW hit such a home run, I think, helped them.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, and like I said, I didn't watch it live, but I did watch it the next day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, great wrestling. Yeah. Like, it was, you know, it was great from bell to bell on all the matches, with the exception of, like, maybe the Nyla Chris Statlander one, because that had some
problems.
It had some rough moments. But, you know, I feel disappointed post-Revolution, though, about the MJF-Cody stuff, because there could have been a lot more continuation with that. Now it's obviously Jake the Snake Roberts and Lance Archer and Cody.
Yeah.
But
Cody's in the fucking Blood and Guts match, so.
Yeah, it just. This is, and I've said this before, you know, this is the part that draws me away from AEW, is how they do their stories.
The scatterbrain stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, and it's like, come on, guys, you can do better on that end of things. So with that, we're getting near the end, and this is the one that you really want to do. I know this.
Well, I think it deserves discussion because we did it last year,
and we're going to do it this year.
We're going to do it this year. So,
and that is the Wrestling Observer Newsletter 2019. Award and Revolution. Oh, well, just the awards.
We're not going to do the Revolution.
Right, yeah. Now, just sorry, I was reading the headline. I was like, oh, wait, no.
Because you're an idiot and you don't self-edit.
So there's, I believe, what, just two categories? Yeah, there's two categories. You have category A and
there are a lot of categories. They're just different. They call them category A and category B. It's just like different levels of
levels.
Yeah, it's like who is the best wrestler versus who is the best brawler.
Yeah. So starting right off at the top, you have Wrestler of the Year, Chris Jericho.
I cannot agree. Like, he may have been the most important piece for AEW this year, but I would argue that there have been way better, more consistent regular performers that didn't use a back elbow as a finishing move.
I definitely agree with that.
I mean, take your pick. Adam Cole, Hangman, Hangman Page this year, but not so much last year. Adam Cole, Jonathan Key Wrestling Gargano.
Could you do Gargano though, despite the injury riddled year that he had?
Why not?
I mean, yeah, he had hell of a matches, but I mean,
how long was he out with injury?
He missed a few months.
Uh huh. Jericho didn't wrestle for the first half of last year.
Yeah, because his first match, well, he did Wrestle Kingdom.
That's and then one match.
And then I think he did one more thing in Japan, and then I think he did Double or Nothing. So, yeah.
Alan James, Cuthbert Styles. Like, there are many other options than Jericho. Jericho might have been the most important figure in wrestling last year because of what he brought to AEW.
But
I wouldn't call him Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah. And we're also going to kind of notice a trend as we go through this list too. Because, yeah. Next up, you have Most Outstanding Wrestler of Will Ospreay.
I can't deny it. Well, I can. Like, I would be interested to see what, like, second, third, and fourth were. But
we don't get to see that.
Ospreay's a good shout.
Yeah. Tag Team of the Year. The Lucha Bros.
Fuck off.
My sentiments exactly. Like, I would have put Young Bucks. I would have put
Proud and the Powerful.
Proud and the Powerful. God, there's just so many other
Roppongi 3K. Like, there's just so many other choices. But yeah,
so many better choices.
And I'm not saying the Lucha Brothers are a bad choice. I just don't think they were Tag Team of the Year.
Yeah,
they got carried a lot by the Young Bucks last year. So,
best on interviews. Chris Jericho. Now, here's the question I want to ask. Define interviews. Are we talking about in-ring promos, or are we actually talking about doing interviews with the press?
I think they may mean in-ring promos.
Yeah. I mean, he does great.
He does very good promos.
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of other people that do as well.
Yeah.
Promotion of the year, New Japan, fine.
Most
outstanding TV show, AEW Dynamite. At least it's not being the Elite.
Yep.
I can't argue with that. It was either going to be that or NXT. So.
Yeah. Match of the year is Will Ospreay versus Shingo Takagi. Takagi.
Yeah. Very, very good match. The final of the Best of the Super Juniors.
Yes.
I do believe. I think that's the one they mean.
Unfortunately, it doesn't tell you.
Well, the point is that I think he and Shingo had a couple of matches, and I'm not sure which one specifically they're referencing, but I will be very surprised if it's not the one from the final of the Best of the Super Juniors.
Yeah.
Which makes sense to me. It was a very, very, very good match.
Feud of the year, Adam Cole versus Jonathan Q Wrestling Gargano.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I knew it was going to be one of my favorite feuds of the year at the moment that Adam Cole went to Johnny Gargano, dad's restaurant, and put a picture of him on the wall that said, finally a champion you can be proud of. Signed, Adam Cole.
Most improved wrestler, Lance Archer.
I can see that.
Essentially he went, you know, after having a failed stint in WWE, kind of toiling in Impact, he kind of reinvented himself out in New Japan.
Yeah, now he's in AEW.
So, I mean, I can see that for most improved. Most charismatic, Chris Jericho. There's a lot. I mean, here's the thing. You know, I'm not a big fan of like the Street Profits.
Here's the thing about most charismatic is it's such a vague
description.
It's such a vague category. What makes up charisma?
Yeah.
Like Velveteen Dream.
Yeah.
Or
I would say Street Profits.
Orton, or like what makes up charisma?
Now, okay, this one really best brawler.
You missed one.
Oh, yeah, best technical, right? You're right, best technical wrestler, Zack Sabre Jr.,
without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, yeah, I have no complaints here. Best brawler. Ishii with multiple exclamation points.
Hero Ishii.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yep. Best high flyer, Will Ospreay.
I'm not sure about that one. Ospreay has done a lot to like ground his game recently. He still flies a bit, but like his finisher isn't 6:30 anymore. Like I think that should still go to Ricochet, but
yeah. Most overrated, King Corbin.
What is overrated?
Like,
overpushed, sure. Overexposed, sure. But is he overrated?
I think he's being utilized. He's
a really good heel.
Yeah. Really good heel, and he's somebody who is good in the ring and is actually a good foil to build up faces. So yeah. I wouldn't say he's overrated. I think he's right where he should be, honestly. Yeah. But I do agree he is overexposed and overpushed. I mean, sometimes you got to cool it off a little bit then bring him back up again. Most underrated, Chad Gable. I'm not saying
– yes.
I'm sorry. I know they have it as Shorty G on the list.
Don't say his other name.
Yeah, fuck that. Chad Gable.
Fuck yes.
I agree with that. Chad is so amazing in the ring. Like, the fact that they flubbed the storyline with Kurt Angle about the son, like, it fucking wrote itself for Chad Gable.
Yeah.
Rookie of the year, Jungle Boy.
Except Jungle Boy's not a rookie. He's been wrestling for years.
Yeah.
I would like to see the...
Could it be based off of TV exposure?
Qualifications for rookie.
I agree with that, but could it be based off of television exposure? Because technically
then
speaking...
Then why isn't it Luchasaurus? Who's the more over part of that tag team?
Because he was on Lucha Underground?
Was he?
Yeah. That's where he came from.
But wasn't Jungle Boy on, like, MLW or something? I don't know.
Maybe. Anyway, I don't know.
The point being, Jungle Boy's not a fucking rookie.
Yeah, he's been doing it a while.
Yeah.
Best non-wrestler, Paul Heyman.
Duh.
Best TV announcer, Kevin Kelly.
Bullshit.
Tom Phillips.
Mauro Ranallo.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, Mauro Ranallo. Tom Phillips I would put up there, too.
Mauro Ranallo. Tom Phillips. Excalibur.
Yeah, Excalibur is good. Golden Boy. When he gets the opportunity.
Yeah.
Oh, Golden Boy is so good. Worst TV announcer. Corey Graves.
Bollocks, Michael Cole is still alive.
Damn. I mean, I can understand the hate towards Corey Graves.
Me too. But he's not Michael Cole.
Yeah. Best major wrestling show, AEW Double or Nothing.
There were takeovers better than Double or Nothing.
There were definitely takeovers better than that. Yeah. Worst major wrestling show. This one is an easy guess. WWE Blood Money.
Yep.
Let's be honest, they should just get rid of that category because that's what it's going to be every year as long as WWE has the contract. Let's just put that out there.
So there's another one they should get rid of later as well.
Yeah. Best wrestling maneuver, Will Ospreay Stormbreaker.
I like it. I wouldn't say it's necessarily the best, but...
Hey, at least it's not Jericho's Judas effect.
The Judas effect. Yeah.
Yeah. At least it's not that.
Or the silly string.
Okay. I think this might be the other one that you're referring to.
You are correct.
Most disgusting promotional tactic, WWE continuing business in Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Just get rid of it. It ain't going away. Just, you know, it's a 10-year contract. Get over it. You know, and we've said this several times.
Yep.
When those two events every year happen, just don't watch it.
Yep.
That's it. That's all you have to do. Stop making a big fucking deal.
The problem is they're now doing major title changes on those shows.
Yeah, that's...
There's now been a major world title change on the last two Blood Money shows.
Yeah. Because they know people don't want to watch it, and this is their way of making us try to watch it.
Yeah.
Because not only that, but also the SmackDown tag titles changed hands. And I believe the Raw tag team titles changed hands at Blood Money.
No.
No, no, that's right. The Raw tag titles dropped
the night after on Raw.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they defended it and then the defense again at Elimination Chamber. Yep. Yeah, that's what it was. Worst TV show, Monday Night Raw.
Well, we skipped.
No. We did the most disgusting.
All right, yeah. Sorry.
Worst TV show is Monday Night Raw.
I think SmackDown's been a little bit worse recently, but.
Worst match of the year, Hell in a Cell, Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins. Yep. I think we can all agree on that one.
The Hell in a Cell match that ended in the stoppage. There's no other. Is there another choice?
Yeah. Worst feud of the year, Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
Worst promotion of the year, WWE.
Depends on your definition of worst promotion.
Yeah. Best.
If we're talking about the major promotions, everyone's going to vote at WWE every time because it ain't AEW and it ain't at New Japan.
Yeah. Best booker is Ghetto.
Yeah.
Or Ghetto. Promoter of the year, Tony Khan. Ben just spit up his drink.
This is coming from a crowd that voted being the elite best TV show last year.
Yeah. Best gimmick, The Fiend Bray Wyatt. I mean, you can't deny what Bray Wyatt has done with the whole Fiend thing. I mean, you can't help the fact that he can't fully control the booking side of things.
When it started, sure.
Yeah, but at least he has something that was fresh.
Like I said, when it started, sure.
Yeah.
Now, I don't give a shit.
Worst gimmick, Shorty G. That's the only
confirmed.
Time.
Confirmed.
Yeah. We like, this is the one time we say that the name. But yeah, that. Best.
Let's put it this way. When Shorty G beats out the librarians, you have a problem with your gimmick.
Yeah. And here's the thing. And then we'll move on to the last one. Props to Chad Gable for at least owning it and just going the hell of it. I'm going to take this and I'm going to run with it.
Yeah.
You know, massive props to Chad. But still. He is such a good talent that he does not deserve that.
Correct.
And then the last one, box office draw, Chris Jericho.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. But so I just want to throw this out there for. When it comes to WWE on this list, they have three positive things. Cole Gargano,
yep.
Heyman, and The Fiend. And four, most underrated, Chad Gable. So they have four positive ones where people voted positively in favor of WWE. Take out the two Saudi Arabia things.
Yep.
And it is overwhelmingly super negative towards WWE.
I don't disagree, though. The problem is, and I'm not going to say, no, this is coming from the people that voted being the elite best TV show. I'm going to say the WWE puts out so much more programming than AEW. And so much more content than other
promotions
that there's more out there to dislike. And also, if you notice, it's stuff even people that were like down on, even the people who were pro WWE were down on for a while. Right?
Like, yeah.
So,
but yeah, I definitely though, I agree with you. Get rid of the most disgusting promotional tactic and the worst wrestling major wrestling show, because they're going to be the same two things every year
for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. For at least the next 8 to 10 years, just get the fuck over it, you know, but I will say this though. You know, WWE is at least doing some good with getting, even though they're not long, getting women's matches on the card. because that is something that the Saudi officials did fight. They didn't want it. And it's slowly something that's becoming a little more.
Don't care.
Yeah. So, but that's the only one positive thing I'll say out of it, because it is a culture thing. So, but well, that was fun. You know? So you were talking about it earlier. Let's talk about it now. Awesome Con, baby.
Yeah.
Actually, we can just talk about that weekend in general, because, you know,
assuming that
everything goes on. Yeah, everything goes on according to plan.
Yeah.
Because the Friday of Awesome Con,
yeah,
we are proud to announce that Awesome Mania 8, the pro wrestling fan panel, is coming to you on Friday, May 1st from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time in Panel Room 150. Ben and I will be joined by our good friend from Castwave Studios, Mr. Brian Massey, for the panel. And then, but this is where it gets better, Ric Flair is going to be there on the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that his panel is supposed to be on Friday.
Yep.
Mick Foley is going to be there, and he's going to be there all 3 days. And Road Warrior Animal has been confirmed by RF Video. I think there's supposed to be one or two more that are supposed to be announced for RF Video for who's coming to Awesome Con. And I know that at least one other wrestling panel has been approved, but they haven't announced their day and time and panel room yet.
Correct. There's the wrestling for
the marginalized
and minorities that
have
gone on the last couple of years.
Yeah. So they have announced that they have been approved, and once we get a date and time for them and date and time for like Rick and Mix and, you know, maybe some other wrestling panels, we will get those all out to everybody so everyone can support everyone.
Yep.
Because it's not just Awesome Mania. It's every, you know, there's a lot of great wrestling out there, you know.
I mean, it's pretty much Awesome Mania because we're the only panel that's been there all 8 years of Awesome Con.
Yeah.
Just saying.
But at the same time, there's some other up-and-comings. Well, one up-and-coming and, you know, obviously whenever the wrestlers come in. But then...
I wouldn't call them up-and-coming. They've been going for like 3 or 4 years, dude.
I thought this is the third year. Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Thought this was their third, but still.
Well, it's why I said 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So, you know what a three is? That's when I said 3 out of 3 and 4, dickhead.
All right. But then this is the one that really tipped the scales on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Earlier this week. So now on Friday, May 1st, is NXT at the Entertainment and Sports Arena in Southeast DC.
That is going to be a hell of a Friday.
And so at the time, they wouldn't let us know. Now they're like in the email that I got. Hold on. Let me pull up the email because it's, yeah. where is it? Oh, yeah, that's right. I got to put in my timesheet.
Why is that important to the podcast?
I don't know, because it was in the email. So right now they're promoting the Broserweights.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Adam Cole, Keith Lee, Tommaso Ciampa,
yeah,
Finn Balor. Those are the ones that are pictured. They're also promoting Gargano, Bianca Belair, Velveteen Dream, Tegan Nox, and Dakota Kai, plus many more.
Yeah, if they don't bring Velveteen Dream, there's going to be a problem.
Okay, I'm throwing this out there now. Velveteen Dream versus Leo Rush, the match between the two hometown boys.
Mm.
Either that, or you put them in a tag team.
So last time NXT was in DC, they were running another show on the same night somewhere else. So we only had like half the talent pool here.
Yeah.
Why we didn't get to see like Undisputed Era or that kind of stuff. I am so fucking excited to see a full strength.
Squad. Well, also, and I think what it was is that when NXT does these tours, they have one squad go to the cities and then the other squad stays in Florida and they do the house shows in Florida because obviously they need to keep some talent for those shows to at least draw some people in.
Yeah.
But yeah, like last time, like we did get Gargano.
We got Ciampa.
Yeah.
We got Velveteen Dream. We got Ricochet. We got Aleister Black and Andrade on their way out. Because it was like their last tour.
Well, no, because it was Andrade's last show and it was No Way Jose's last show.
Oh, no.
And because Aleister had just won the title off of Andrade.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because that was the main event. The main event match was Andrade versus Aleister for the title.
Yeah.
The match before intermission was Ricochet versus Velveteen Dream, which was hands down match of the night. We had the Street Profits.
We had Street Profits against Forgotten Sons, but this is back before either of them were like major
players. Yeah.
We got Candice LeRae and Nikki Cross against Bianca Belair and Lacey Evans.
Yeah.
I think that was what we got, to be honest.
And we got a few more things. I just can't remember it all off the top of my head.
Oh, we got Cassius Ohno against
somebody.
We got Cassius Ohno against Ciampa.
Yeah, that's what it was because that's what led Gargano to run out because that was like during the whole feud and stuff like that. God, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We've been waiting 2 years for NXT to come back to DC.
Yeah.
So,
that was the night that y'all left and I was waiting there for my Uber and got to meet like Nikki Cross and Cassius Ohno and a bunch of others. It was great.
Well, this time around, because it's Awesome Con weekend, we can linger a little bit because I'm actually probably going to be crashing at a hotel in DC because I'm actually running in the Awesome Con 5K the next morning. And I got to be up. Yeah.
You're going to be so fucked, dude.
I know. So funny thing. So when they announced the 5K, I text messaged Penrod. And I go, hey, we're going to do this, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, you're going to keep up? And I'm like, what are you talking about, me keep up? You're going to stick with me so I don't die, right? And he's like, he just starts laughing hysterically. And he's like, yeah, sure, we'll go with that one. No, actually, though, I will give a shout out to Penrod. He actually gave me some like training tips to properly prepare for running in the 5K, to get ready for the run in the 5K because I've never done it before.
Cool.
So,
well, let's do our positive things and wrap this up.
Positive is that despite a couple shitty cards, we had Revolution and we got really good wrestling, but also despite the fears of this coronavirus pandemic, we're still getting wrestling where everyone else has postponed or canceled. We still have wrestling, and I think that's a positive because, like, you know, and I actually agree with this one sentiment. Let me pull this up. I screenshotted what somebody said on Facebook about this. And it was actually our friend Marco who did that one wrestling panel that only lasted the 1 year at AwesomeCon, where they had like the six people on it. He said, I never thought I'd say this. I'm praying for Vince McMahon to get his way. There was a reason the first event after the 9/11 aftermath was SmackDown. You know, you had the fear running rampantly, and then you have the first SmackDown after 9/11 to calm everyone and say, it's going to be all right. Let us entertain you.
Yeah.
That's what we're getting tonight. You know, it's the first SmackDown after a major thing would happen Wednesday night, you know, with the NBA and the NCAA coach. And, you know, as a result, NBA, MLS, MLB, NHL, XFL, you know, all of that stuff. We don't have it right now. We don't have that distraction. We have the wrestling as a distraction for us. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge positive because that's stuff that we need.
As for me, I think my positive thing is going to be the whole Matt Hardy situation. whether he becomes the Exalted One or he's fighting the Dark Order, or they give me my dream and they teleport the entire roster to the Hardy compound for 5 weeks. Just do it. 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 Just let Matt book for 5 weeks. Dear God. The run up, the whole stuff with being the Elite and Free the Delete and all of that has been real, real fun to watch. So, and King Mac, the most recent episode of Free the Delete is just brilliant. It's full of just jabs at WWE. Matt, the Young Bucks there, and Matt's like, I need you to kick Zenith out of my body and bury me. And Matt's like, what? You mean book you badly? And he's like, no, I've had tons of that already.
God damn.
And then like King Maxwell runs up and goes, hey guys, is Orange Cassidy with you? And he's like, get out of here, you little turd.
You know, I will say this. One other positive I want to throw out there is I like how WWE is handling Matt Hardy's departure. You know, they could have just done, we wish you the best in your future endeavors, but they actually went out and they made Matt look like money with the statement that they gave for him. They normally don't do that. You know, and that's actually a positive. I like that. You know? You know, because now that, I mean, also, let's put this in perspective. WWE also just made, when Matt Hardy does eventually go to, like, AEW or whatever he does,
yeah,
that much bigger because of that statement that they put out there on him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just saying that, like, I just think that the stuff that, like, it's just been so much fun to watch. Also, speaking of fun stuff to watch, you should watch this week's episode of Battle of the Brands.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
They finally resolved the Zelina Vega thing. And I'm not going to spoil the result, but there's some salt involved. But yeah. Again, for everything, I will just say, keep watching. There's something out there that you like, stick to it. If there's something out you don't like, don't watch it.
Yep.
Vote with your feet. Vote with your wallet. Vote with your eyes.
Yep. So with that, Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Find me on the Twitsores at Bob T. Goldfish. You can find us at 321 Podcast on Twitter as well, which covers the channel when we go live on Twitch and other stuff. Jordan feels inane to just tweets mainly about Star Trek, to be honest, because he's on a bit of a Star Trek kick at the moment. That's where you can find me and the channel.
All right. And then, as always, at The Lindenbaum on the Twitter, X75 Productions on Facebook, and TXHTHockey.com/AwesomeMania, which, by the way, every other week or the weeks that we don't record, there will be a news and notes article from us where you get Ben and I's thoughts, along with maybe Brian Massey, Matt Carroll, Jordan Johnson, whoever can chime in. At
just to correct Mike on his own Twitter handle, it's The Lindenbaum 75.
Oh, did I say the Lindenbaum X75?
No, you just said the Lindenbaum.
Oh, oops. Yeah, it's the Lindenbaum 75.
I got your back, bro.
Thanks, bro. But obviously, with the NHL stoppage, there's not a lot. Anticipate other content to go up there, like the new Awesome
Mania. Can you imagine what, like, SportsCenter is going to be like next week?
I know. And you know this because you're in the Facebook group for everyone that contributes to the website, Awesome Mania, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know that I told all of my writers, if there's anything you want to write about, like any interest, any hobby,
yeah,
write about it. Because we don't know how long this is going to last. And So just keep an eye out for the website in general. Even if you're not a hockey fan, you never know what type of content we're going to be putting up. I know I'm going to try to record more podcasts than the time because now I'm going to have time to do it.
Maybe we can finally get back to that Power Rangers podcast.
I love how you bring that up. We were supposed to record that yesterday.
I'm sitting right here, dude.
I know.
I'm just waiting for you to like tag me in, coach.
So we were supposed to record that last night. We were supposed to record like 4 or 5 episodes, and then the whole coronavirus stuff of all the sports leagues happened. And I was like, I'm so sorry, Ed. I have to do this now. So we're actually supposed to record tomorrow, and I know we're gonna get more nerdy notions. And actually, I want to take this advantage. I want to see if maybe we can get Awesome Mania 2K20 up off the ground.
Good luck.
I'm going to try. But I also would like to maybe take advantage and try to do some more Twitch streaming because during hockey season, it's just really hard to do it. But yeah, so keep an eye on the site. We got the news and notes article that we're going to put out when we don't record. So,
off weeks.
Yeah, and let us know what you think, and feel free to comment, because it's still a work in progress. I know, Ben, you've given me some suggestions on how to make it more presentable and stuff like that, because it was like a first run with it. So,
And you will get our unfettered thoughts on that. We're not going to censor it just because it's on a website, or...
Yeah.
Be like, tune in next week for more information or whatever.
But... Yeah, no, we're going to give you our uncensored thoughts. However, we will be somewhat censored when we do Awesome Media, Con. We will be PG-13.
The panel at Awesome Con will be as PG-13 as we can make it.
Yeah. So,
unless there are no kids in the room.
And we get permission.
Has yet to happen.
Yeah. So, So with that, Ben, take us away, my man.
All right, guys, gals, and non-aligned pals. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And remember, wash your hands, cough in the elbows. And until next time, until we can actually be ringside, we'll see you on the other end of the pod.
You want to do that again?
Yeah. That sucked. We'll see you ringside when we're allowed to be ringside.
Peace.